Welcome to the Small Business Sessions from Enterprise Nation, sponsored by Starling Bank. We're a podcast packed with inspiration from entrepreneurs who've been there and done it, and advice from experts on the topics you need to know to start and grow a brilliant business. Head to enterprisenation.com/podcast for more information, and don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Well, welcome back to the Small Business Sessions from Enterprise Nation, sponsored by Starling Bank. I'm Dan Martin, a small business journalist, and big thanks for joining us for this week's episode. Well, this week, we're talking about the benefits of being a rebel business and why being non-conformist could be good for your company. And to talk about that subject, we have the perfect guest. We're joined by Ben Keane, who is a co-founder of the Rebel Book Club. Hello, Ben.
Morning, Dan. Good to be here.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining us. So let's get straight to it. First of all, do you want to tell us what is the Rebel Book Club and how did it all happen?
Well, Rebel Book Club started by accident. You know, you have all these grand designs of businesses and you make great plans. And then the one that you kind of like start for a bit of fun or accident on the side ends up being the project that takes a lot of your time and becomes your focus. So we're going back to 2015. If you can imagine a bamboo co-working space on the island of Bali with monkeys swinging between the trees outside, drinking green juices, working from our MacBooks, all the cliches of the digital nomad in one. And I was out there with a group, hosting an actual startup program myself. So that was my kind of how to pay for my time away with my family in Bali,
right?
Was to run a start, very meta. Anyway, and we had these dinners out where we'd go and go around the table and, okay, everyone bring an idea. And then we have another round of drinks and food and then another idea. And so by the end of the night, you've shared 150 ideas and someone at the end of the table has sort of written them all down. And then the next day they share the spreadsheet back when people have sort of had their coffees and sobered up and go, right, anyone want to do anything with these ideas? Mm. And I was reading back through them the next day and one written down said, I struggled to finish. I'm downloading loads of books onto my Kindle. I was struggling to finish them. Mm. Would love to solve this problem for myself and maybe others. And I was like, well, I've got that problem too. And anyway, Ben and I met up for a juice and we compared Kindles and we realized that we had, you know, 50 to 100 books downloaded onto our Kindles, the majority nonfiction, a lot on business and startups, a lot on popular culture, science, climate, you know, all sorts of things going on in the world around us. And most of them were between 10 and 30% read. So like 1 to 5 chapters. And we're like, why aren't we getting past, you know, the first third of the book? Mm. And the answer, of course, was that nonfiction takes a bit more effort than fiction. Usually you don't have cliffhangers at the end of each chapter. And secondly, because we're like a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs, freelancers, distracted by the next shiny thing that we're curious about. So we just, you know, and the ease of downloading books and the price of them has obviously made the volume of them piling up. Anyway, little did we know, but we stumbled across a problem that the Japanese have a word for, sonduku, which means literally the growing pile of unread books on your bedside table, or in our case, on our Kindles.
That's brilliant.
And so we were suffering from this affliction of sonduku. And so we thought, well, let's try and fix it. And so this is not a rebellious or an original idea, starting a book club to make us more accountable and to learn from. But I guess the difference was that we were going to say the rebellion was almost a tongue in cheek. It was like, we're going to finish books as well as download and start them. And we're going to try and apply what we learn, which I know is how education is supposed to work. But we've kind of lost our way a little bit in this digital, distracted world that many of us are sort of trying to find our way through. So it was a return to that. So it was sort of like, oh, let's be rebellious and actually read books and apply them to our working and personal lives. And so we picked a book to start with. It was 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel. I don't know if you remember that classic sort of entrepreneurship book on building monopolies. And so we read that in Bali with a group of us, and then we met up in a cafe and had designed a cocktail around the book, and it was fun and it was productive, and it was like, okay, that was good. And then we came back to London and I said, let's do this again, Ben, only this time let's charge people to join us for two reasons. One, because we're then accountable to them to deliver, like to be their online reading coach, and also to nudge them to read the book, but also to organize a meetup at the end, and we'll put a cocktail in there. So we did that for the first, for I think this was, yeah, 6 years ago this month. And we picked a book, Happiness by Design by Paul Dolan, and we end up meeting on the rooftop of Virgin HQ in Paddington and drinking some rum in the May sunshine. And with a group of about 50, you know, the goal, I think, was to get 15 people, and we had 24 people sign up. Great. And we charged £15 because it was twice the value of the kind of a paperback. And we included the book voucher. So, right. I mean, if you added the cocktail in there, it was a great deal.
Bargain.
And we're 20, and we said, look, if we enjoy this, then maybe we'll do it again. And that was 73 months ago, and we've done it every month since.
Wow, that's brilliant. It's such a good story. I mean, like you said, it isn't new starting a book club, but you know, starting a book club that has now become a successful business, that is rebellious. So you said you've now got membership. You're now charging a monthly annual membership to get people on board. And you know, membership is a tough. Is membership and subscription can be tough. So how have you, and that's, but it's probably a model that a lot of listeners are thinking about who are listening to this podcast. So how have you managed to be successful at getting people on board as members?
Well, it depends how you determine success. You know, we're still only 1,000 paying members. So we haven't scaled from, you know, zero to millions. Mm. And, you know, we've done this very slow and organically. But it is profitable. It always has been. And and it's been a lot of fun and impactful as well. And now we've got other revenue, which I can tell you about in a minute. Mm. But we started very simply with that. It was like lack of ambition. So we said, let's just do this for a month. So it was a classic side project hustle, whatever you want to call it. 2 hours on a Sunday night. Both of us were really busy. And our motivation wasn't business. It was really, it was community and learning. But I'd learned enough and Ben had in previous projects to say, well, if this is going to go beyond 3 months of enthusiasm and passion, let's attach a financial model to it. And just to see if it works, because then at least we have some funds we can put in the club. We can, you know, if we get too busy, we can get someone else to help us with this. Mm. We can pay for cocktails and vouchers, you know. So that was really the motivation. The business model itself was, as I just said, £15 was felt price rise about right. Yeah. I think it's undervalued it, to be honest. And I'd always say with subscription at the start, go high. You know, it's this thing of like, think of the price that you've got in your mind to charge for your first membership.
Yeah.
Don't look at the industry. Just think what the value is. Then go up a bit until it starts to feel uncomfortable. If I was to say, hey, Dan, this is how much the membership is. And I was like, I feel a bit uncomfortable saying that to you. As a potential customer, then add 20%. Mm. And that's your start number. Okay. Now, we didn't do this with Rebel Book Club, so I'm not putting that theory into practice, but that's a really good exercise, I think, for pricing, just generally in business, but especially in memberships. And then you can discount from there. So you can say, oh, yeah, it's £30 a month, but we're offering the first 100 places for 15 or whatever it is. So, but it's much easier to bring a price down than to go up. So that was how we started. And then in terms of how it got going, you know, it was just amongst friends and friends of friends for the first 15, 20 people. And then we just did a bit of Instagram, and we documented and shared the content of what we were doing. And, you know, if you look back, we've got 6 years of data on this. So this is not a rocket hockey ship startup growth. But it was, you can see every month up until actually the first month of COVID, so 5 years in, we grew as membership and revenue every single month for 5 years. Mm. And so it was actually easier before we started working on it full time, but that's mainly because of the pandemic. Yeah. So that was how it worked. And I think with membership, and then in terms of toolkit for setting up the membership business, really simple, and it hasn't really changed. We use, you know, go cardless for the subscriptions, and there are loads of options out there. We use Stripe and so on as well now, but go cardless has been great because the fees are really low. You just create the pay links, drop them into emails. So people would apply through a type form. We'd respond by email, dropping a go cardless link for the membership. They'd sign up to direct debit. We would email the congrats, welcome to the club. And then we'd send them their event invite, a monthly newsletter, and a book voucher. Mm. And that was the club.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we started to do voting and it grew. But we kept that. I think one of the advantages of starting without ambition, super small membership model like that on limited time, because we have 2 hours a week, is that you keep it simple. And so actually the basis of Rebel Book Club in terms of that model has not changed in 6 years, even though we now do lots of other things, but the core experience is the same.
That's great. And do you think, because obviously you started in London where there's, you know, such an entrepreneurial community, you're interested in meeting up and different events, and that you started there and now you've expanded it to other cities. So I guess that if that's something you'd also recommend, you know, focus on one place first, get that right before you then move on to other parts of the world.
Yeah, I mean, we refer to this guy a lot, don't we, probably at EN as well as at Rebel Book Club, but Seth Godin, you know, it's the minimum viable audience. So we talk about minimal viable product or service, but minimum viable audience in terms of your marketing strategy makes so much sense because you go, right, where could I find my first five? If you're B2B, my first one customer. If you're B2C, my first 10 members, my first 50 email addresses, my first, you know, 25 event signups. And you just got to go where they are. Now, online, that's, you know, it's targeted ads, it's content in the right places. It's all the digital marketing stuff that you teach people at, you know, Enterprise Nation. But in terms of physical locations, it's about saying, okay, where are these networks of people? Are they going to? So often it's other events. So, okay, well, if I stand up for 1 minute at an Enterprise Nation event and say, hey, we're starting a book club for entrepreneurial people, then, you know, we got a lot of our first people from Escape City because I was hosting events there. So that's the kind of starting point. It helped certainly up until the pandemic. Location helps us a lot for us because we'd host these events every month and they were growing in size to the extent in, you know, Jan, Feb 2020, we were having 300 people come to a meetup. Right. In London, and we'd split them out between East and West London, and we were about to divide again. Kind of like, you know, an egg splitting. We're about to divide again into like North and South London. And that word of mouth is fantastic because people say, I'm going out, and then there's social content attached to it, you know, from the event, from the cocktail, from the venue, from the book, etc. So that worked really effectively. And obviously we've had to change that. And we were at the stage of Feb last 2020 where we were operating in six cities, although London was definitely around 70% of our membership.
Right.
And to be honest, I think we could have stayed focused on London for good with Rebel Book Club and probably grown the membership. If we'd stayed with that in-person events model just in London, I'm pretty confident we could have grown the membership faster than we have done in the last year, but we haven't had so much control because you're focusing on one big city.
Yeah.
You know, there's thousands of people there that we could have brought on board and we could have just done everything there. But there was a lot of our members were starting to say, hey, I've moved out to, I was in London, I'm now in Bristol or Berlin or Manchester. Can we get going here? So we were starting to experiment with that sort of rollout model, you know, of could we run these in other places? And we had about 20 cities lined up for 2020 because we just got the funding and we were going to work on that. And then COVID happened and we sort of had to move everything online.
The Small Business Sessions are sponsored by Starling Bank. Starling is the digital bank reimagining banking for how the world works now. Its award-winning business account has helped thousands of businesses cut down on admin and do more of what they love. Say goodbye to branch queues, monthly fees and card readers, and hello to instant payment notifications, smart seamless accounting and 24/7 support. Best of all, applying for an account takes just minutes from your phone. Download the Starling Bank app today to find out why Starling was voted Britain's best bank 3 years running. You raised 148,000 on Crowdcube and you wanted 100,000, which is great. So why do you think you were so successful at the crowdfund and what advice would you give to other people wanting to do the same?
Yeah, my advice to other people is don't crowdfund.
Okay.
No, I've been involved with probably about five or six crowdfunds, half of which have succeeded and half haven't. And all of them require significant effort. So just do not underestimate the effort that goes into crowdfunding. But if everything's lined up in terms of why you're doing it and the timing, it can be one of the best things you do as a startup or a small business because you're not just getting the funding, you're getting all this marketing and publicity with it. It's basically a big marketing campaign for your brand. So the most important thing for the crowdfunding and the reason we did it was because we were at that moment, we were at that stage. And bearing in mind, this is 4 years into the project. I would say as a business, it wasn't really up and running until 2017, and this was 2019. So let's say we were 2 years in.
Yeah.
And we didn't need to raise money from the point of view we were operating with a small profit every month. But no one was employed there. We were still volunteering our time, you know, paying ourselves a small bonus at the end of the year and putting the rest back into the club. Mm-hmm. But by that stage, actually, this has got potential, and we're now potentially, I could put some more time into it. So if one of us is going to go into this full time, build a small team, give this a good crack for the next 2 or 3 years, see what's possible, then a funding round would really help.
Mm.
We talked to a few angel investors, you know, potential angel investors in our network, and there was interest there. But what, as people will know, to make an angel round work, you usually need a lead investor. So you need someone to say, let's say we're trying to raise 100,000, we need someone to come in with at least a quarter, if not a half of that fund up front, to then like go to the other and say, right, Dan is in for 50,000. Yeah. The rest, then you've got momentum, right?
Yeah.
But so what we had was we had five or six people that were all in for like 10, 15% of what we wanted to raise, but we didn't have a lead angel investor. So then we mentioned this at one of our events, and I remember it very clearly. We were at Entrepreneur First Space talking about psychedelic drugs. The book was about that,
right? Okay.
And at the end of the event, we were like, there was 150 of our members there. It was a classic sort of Rebel Book Club night in the summer in 2019. And I remember at the end, Ben and I stood up and said, look, we've got this this idea, we want to try and raise some funds, and we weren't quite sure how it was going to go down with our members, because we basically were like, do you know anyone who might want to invest? And the overwhelming response was, one, people were really excited, and two, they said, no, let us, can we all invest? I haven't got £10,000 plus, but I put in 100, 500, £50, whatever. Mm. And I was kind of resistant to crowdfunding because I know how much work it is. But I was like, actually, there's momentum here and there's energy, and let's go for it.
Yeah.
So we went to CrowdCube, who I've known for a long time, and we managed to get on their site quite quickly. It usually takes about 3 months to do all the planning and due diligence and everything, and they're really, really strict, as I'm sure a lot of equity crowdfunding platforms are, around every single thing you say on a crowdfunding page. They basically fact check,
right?
Much more so than, you know, what people say in the House of Commons or something. So, you know, we said things like, oh, we had these authors come to our events, so Seth Godin was one of them. And he, you know, we'd had an hour with Seth Godin on Skype a year before, and it was on Instagram, the visuals were there, you know, and so on. So we put that in as our evidence that we'd hosted Seth Godin as a credible author. And they said, no, we need to see written evidence from him. I was like, well, most of the communications we do with authors is on Instagram, yeah, WhatsApp, yeah, and these messages disappear. And anyway, we managed to dig out that one, Seth's comment saying, yes, I'll be there somewhere. But it's that's the whole point. If you say, oh, we've had this great impact, you then have to prove it. So that's the work. And it's a little frustrating when you're going through the process. But if you think about it from the other side, the investor's point of view, it's actually great, because it means that your trust when you're looking at these pitches, you know every word on there is being analyzed. And so if you like the pitch, you like the data, you can invest with confidence in that it's truthful. Mm. So that's the process. We got live. And then what a lot of equity crowdfunding does now is they have a private sort of fundraise period, and then it goes what's called public, which is like when anyone can invest, not IPO'd. Obviously, this is tiny. Mm. And so the private round is essentially when it's the same round, but the private period is when you're basically getting your angels who you haven't got to invest yet to come into the crowd fund or your members to come in. And what we found was that our assumption was that we would convert like 20% of those angel investors we'd have conversations with, and so that would get us like a third or halfway there. And a few of our members who said they would, you know, because you always go for like, okay, 5 to 20% conversion rate, and the opposite happened. So we had like 25% of the members who said they'd invest did straight away, which was amazing. So 100 of our members immediately were like, boom, here's some money, but only one angel.
Right.
So and I think that was because we'd originally said it's going to be an angel round, and then we were like, no, it's a crowdfund round, and that, and so it switched, and that obviously we lost momentum with that, with those people. So it was great that we had the members joining us. We had 100 of them, but it wasn't the same volume of cash. So we had like 10,000-15,000 pounds, I think, all, and 100 members, and of which I think 80 of them were women under 30 years old, so representing our audience really well. But not, and fantastic for, like, you know, diversifying investment, because we know it's always sort of older white men that invest. Yeah. So we, like, this is great, but the cash wasn't there. So what tipped it to success was a bit random in the end, like all these marketing strategies. It's this this funny little thing that happens that, that tips it over the edge. And so Ben, my co-founder, was hosting a Woodlands, like, campfire birthday party for his girlfriend, and yeah, it was, they talked about it around the fire, and there was sort of a lot of, quite a few, I think 30 something freelance journalist, media, marketing, photographer, producer type, so sort of creative young professionals in that group, and they were trying to work out, they were talking about, you know, basically that they, if they can invest some funds into startups, not a lot, but then they get EIS, they get this sort of tax relief, which means their tax bill at the end of the year isn't as big. So there was this conversation going on, oh, well, actually, anyway, two of them went in the next day, and then five followed. And that took us up to sort of halfway to our funding target. And then we went and went live on Crowdcube, and we worked hard on the campaign, and we got, we got over the target and well beyond. So that was our, that was in 2019, and the money hit the bank. The other thing with crowdfunding to remember is that the, you get the, raise the money, but you're only really two thirds of the way there. Then you've then got to do what's called, you've got to kind of do the sort of the ops and the admin at the back end of the round, which is Crowdcube do a great job at helping you manage. But investors can drop out at that point. They have 2 week period or something to say, no, I'm not actually in. And so you lose a few there because their financial positions change, personal positions change, or they've decided they don't really want to invest. So you're actually, you haven't got the money until way past the closing date. And then there's the fees and everything else like that. And then you do all the paperwork and the legals and the shareholding certificates. And then the money hit the bank, I think, 3 months later, just before Christmas 2019.
Wow. That was, that was amazing. That was such a good insight into crowdfunding. That was brilliant. Thank you so much.
One perspective. That was a tiny, that was a tiny raise. You know, people are raising millions. I think one more thing to say on it, Dan, is that I've seen this across many crowdfund rounds, is that there's this feeling of like, and it's symbolic of startups in general, that you see these raises happen very fast. So it's like, oh, we've just raised £1 million in 2 hours. I'm exaggerating, but sometimes it's like that, right? It's the blood, sweat, and tears of the 10 years, or the, in that case, 10 months of hard work is, has happened. So that's a fun story. It's a good publicity story. But the truth is that, that all those campaigns that raise money really fast have built, basically done all the work, onboarded all the angel investors or the membership or whatever it is, so that when they go live, the momentum is so strong that the crowd who see it pop up on the email, go, I've got to get in quick. And that's why you see those rapid success rounds. They're not really raising all that money in a couple of hours.
No, it's not zero to a million in 2 hours, is it? Not at all.
No.
And people are like sheep, aren't they? Like you say, if it goes live with already a couple of hundred grand, you want to be part of it. But I think it shows as well, you had that really, really keen community behind you, you know, and you didn't, you know, they were ready to invest. That's really interesting. You've touched on COVID and its impact. So do you want to go into a bit more detail about that? So you said you had all these plans for physical events, and obviously the pandemic stopped that happening. So what did you do? And how has it been, you know, during COVID? Because, you know, we're here, there's a lot of people are probably reading a lot more, aren't they? Haven't they been over this time?
Yeah. And I feel so much for all those businesses and startups and founders who've, you know, they've had no option. It's not like they could pivot to online or do anything else. But if you're pure retail or you're travel, I used to work, I ran a travel business for a decade. And I've got friends who've been running businesses in that space for years. Really fantastic. A lot of great sustainable tourism impact. and they're all just gone. Mm. They got, and so I actually, at the moment that COVID kicked off properly, I mean, we were all in shock, weren't we, for a couple of weeks in March last year, but I was just relieved because I was like, I'm so lucky. I'm running a book club.
Yeah.
And yes, it's an event. It's an events-based organization at the moment. But the core value of like helping people read more and connect and learn from each other, we can do differently. So, my first reaction was relief that we could keep going. And then, but it was interesting because we were so events-based, 20% of our members, and we'd had a big growth off the back of that crowdfund. So I think we'd onboard another few hundred members. We'd just gone over 1,000 active members. And so we had a lot of momentum. We're about to roll out all these cities. And 20% of that people who joined in the last 3 months cancelled their direct debits within 2 weeks of lockdown.
Right.
So what was really interesting there was that it was just like, and these people, members, hadn't been part of the community that long. They hadn't been to many events. Mm. They've just, it was that moment where everyone was going through their costs and going, I don't know where my next paycheck's going to be in. So I'm cancelling all these direct, non-essential direct debits.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God, we're a book club and people are cancelling. This is full on. So we had to pivot quickly and we did two things. One is we dropped our price, our membership price, to basically say, okay, we're not going to run an in-person event, have a cocktail. And two, we're going to start running online meetups straight away. So we did one, I think, at the end of March. And it was great. You know, it was that sort of buzz of when people started doing events online, yeah. And we had 300 people turn up and we were in cities and it was fun. And we used Hopin, this tiny little website called Hopin in March 2020. I don't even know how we found it because they'd only just launched.
Right.
I mean, the most remarkable timing of any event,
exactly,
of any business launch ever. But what we did know at the time was that we do not want to be on Zoom because already we could see that as powerful an app as it was, it just felt like work. And we said, look, whenever we bring our community together online, we don't want it to feel like work. We want it to feel like a Rebel Book Club night. Mm-hmm. So we found this thing called Hopin. We gave it a go. And all I was like, this, I feel like we've been marketing Hopin aggressively for a year. We obviously haven't contributed to their extraordinary value, but yeah, I do feel like, oh damn, we should have got some equity in there somehow.
Definitely.
But yeah, we started using Hopin. So we have the stage and the breakout rooms. We kept our cocktail going. We had our members chat like spaces and we've kept that going for the last year. And other than that dip at the start, we managed to rebound. And by the summer, we got back to a plateau of people joining as well as leaving. And anyone who runs a membership business, so there's two metrics that matter. How long, obviously, how many people join? Mm. You know, so that's crucial, but also how many people leave. So your conversion rate and your churn rate are your two key metrics. Mm. And over time, that gives you what's called the lifetime value of your customer, how much money they spend with you on average over a 6-12 months period or beyond.
Yeah.
So if it's like, oh, my lifetime value is around £100, which is great. How do we get it to £150? Because that strengthens your business.
Yeah.
And that's by increasing conversion and reducing churn. And so the problem we had after that drop in the beginning of COVID was that our churn rate obviously went up significantly from what was around 4 or 5% to about 10-12%.
Mm.
Which is unsustainable because you're going off a cliff. And our conversion rate dropped a bit. So we were going from like 25%, email to paid member to some like 15%.
Right.
So then very quickly, those two metrics go out of sync and you go from happy growth to like unhappy degrowth.
Mm.
So we got that back in balance by the summer 2020 by working really hard on the virtual events. We did more like, we just did a lot more content, a lot more engagement, a lot more sort of stuff that we wouldn't have done before.
Mm.
And then again in the summer, it dropped because end of lockdown one, people were out. I'm going outside again, a bit like what's happening now. The weather got great. People went outside and we just found online engagement went off again. We're like, oh man, this is really hard. What else can we do? And I think last summer from a business point of view, I was just sort of at my lowest because the March springtime was a lot of it was just reacting. It was,
yeah.
There was a bit of adrenaline. There was just like, let's create something new. Let's do it differently. Let's go, 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 go. We've got nothing to lose here. Everyone's up against it. By the summer, we'd worked really hard and we just hadn't moved forward. And I had to be reminded, like, we are the lucky ones. We're in business. We haven't lost loads of money. We'd kept our little team together. Our core members were happy. We were having fun, you know. So it was just like a sense check. And then September, October, November, December was really good. Mm. And so we started growing. And then we had a really good growth at the end of last year. And then the first quarter of this year during the lockdown, it's been steady. So it's been, you know, we've pivoted our membership model to make it more profitable. And so, yeah, we're doing lots of things. And as of today, April 2021, we're in a solid place. We haven't grown, but we're in a more profitable place as a membership model. But what's different now is that we have started partnering with brands, which are conversations that we've kind of been having for almost a year, and they've all come in the last 6 weeks. Mm. To run exclusive events and partnerships, which is bringing in a different revenue stream. So that's quite, and it adds more value and benefit to our members. Mm. So that feels quite exciting.
Yes, yeah. I think you're right about the Zoom thing. It is more work. And Enterprise Nations have been a big fan of Hopin as well. It's taken a lot of its events, you know, that were normally a very engaged big event onto Hopin because it is much more like a physical fun event. But let's not promote Hopin too much in this podcast, because like you say...
I tell you, I would like to promote one events platform, which I think... So I don't know about you, Dan, but I'm slightly surprised about the lack of innovation in event, like on virtual events. I mean, Hopin, don't get me wrong, is great, and we use it, and it's very effective for the kind of thing we're doing. But, you know, online gaming is, what, 20 years old? Mm. And millions of people hang out in virtual realities all the time. Mm. And I'm like, why isn't this crossed over? It will, of course. Mm. But it's one of those things we keep talking. I was like, I'm sure these lockdowns are going to push the majority of communities like Enterprise Nation, Rebel Book Clubs, Escape the City, all these kind of entrepreneurial, young professional communities, I'm sure are going to end up in virtual reality spaces. Yeah. And it hasn't happened yet. No. We experimented with one, and I want to give a shout out to people want to try something different. It's called Mibo Island, M-I-B-O. I think the website is getmibo.com. And this is a bunch of young Dutch guys who have built their own little gaming space. And then, of course, when COVID happened, they were like, well, this would be quite cool. They started just hanging out there. They were like, well, this would be quite cool to meet up. Mm. And then they started presenting it as like, have your family or team meet up in Mibo. And it's just you're like a little robot with an avatar head, and you just go on and you walk around. And we read a book in January at Rebel Book Club called The Art of Gathering, which is all about creative ways to bring people together. Mm. And so we hosted our event on an island, and it was great because the advantage of it was the individual was much more in control of their experience online, rather than we're on stage or in a breakout room, or they could just go, oh, what's that thing over there? There's a campfire. And actually on the island itself, the majority of people ended up round this sort of virtual campfire and just standing there listening in. So much less structured, but kind of fun. So I hope there's a lot more of that, basically.
Yeah, you're right. You would have thought VR would have had its big moment, but in this time. But that's a really good tip. So just finally, based on everything you've said, obviously the theme of this podcast is about being a rebel, being nonconformist. What advice would you give, generally, a couple of tips based on everything you've done, to summarise why being a rebel can be good for business?
Well, the irony is the Rebel Book Club is probably the least rebellious of all the projects and ventures I've been in, but it's the one that fits best with what we're doing now. And we've stumbled across something that's having a really positive impact on people, and it's a interesting business. I think the most important thing is just to, you know, you listen to all these podcasts, and someone like me right now, is you don't, you know, pick and choose what's really interesting advice for you, because, you know, there's for every time I say this is the best way to crowdfund, there'll be an example of someone who does it differently. And I think there's a risk in this world of wonderful amount of content out there that we almost drown in advice and sort of like, what's the best way to do it? And that's why we still see some of the most exciting and disruptive ideas explode into the world from 20 somethings, because you're at that stage where there's a healthy amount of naivety and ignorance, and you haven't yet really struggled or failed at something. So it's basically, if you're not a 20 something and you haven't listened to all the podcasts or read all the books like I feel like I have now, just get on with building. So double down on building. Obviously still listen to a few podcasts and read a few books, but don't don't feel like you have to follow that certain path. You go, oh, that's, it's really, it's like that stepping outside yourself thing. You're like, it's really interesting they did it that way. Hmm. But, you know, that doesn't have to be your way. So be true to what feels great to you. Listen to the data that you can. Listen to your data, not the data in the marketplace. So the data that you gather, okay, 20 people joined. What did they say? Well, 15 of them loved it. Great. Well, the marketplace says that's not possible to grow from here. Remember all those great startup stories that we've, you know, the unicorn ones, they all start from a non-conformist point of view. They always start with someone saying that's a terrible idea, Airbnb or Uber or whatever it is. And of course they prove everyone wrong. Mm. But listen to the data, because the data will tell you some truths, and then your data, not the external data. And then I think the other thing that people really underestimate, especially in this time where so many things feel overwhelming in the world, and it's not just another generation having another its own set of problems. This is another level of challenges that we're facing, existential challenges we're facing. Is have fun. So that seems like counterintuitive advice. And some people are working on problems that are really serious and really important in the world, but trying to have fun doing it as a team. You know, some of them, you look at some teams, the ones having most fun, they're working on the most hardcore things. Mm-hmm. So people who work in war zones or on the front line of healthcare, they have like this really strong team because they're up against it and they're having a lot of fun despite the tough working conditions and what they're trying to do. And the other thing I think that's interesting about this sort of have fun mindset is that if you think you're trying to, in terms of winning people over, whether it's an argument that you're trying to make, you know, for climate people to change their habits around climate change or anything else, if you're having more fun than the opposition, people want to come to your party. Mm. So actually the people that will win in startups, in campaigns, and in life generally, the ones that are having a better party. Mm. And I don't mean by being hedonistic and just, you know, having this huge party and trashing everything and not dealing with the consequences, but just by doing something that feels, you know, really good and positive and, brings people together that way. Mm.
That's fantastic. I love it. Come to the party and you're definitely having a great one. Well, Ben, thank you so much shared there. Thank you so much for joining us on the Small Business Sessions.
Pleasure, Dan.
You've been listening to the Small Business Sessions from Enterprise Nation, sponsored by Starling Bank. Head to enterprisenation.com/podcast for more information. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.